The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you're a Disney Plus subscriber and you're watching The Mandalorian, Jack and I have a podcast for you.
Every week, we'll discuss the latest episode of The Mandalorian and talk about other great content and maybe some not so great content on Disney Plus as well.
As two lifelong Star Wars fans, we have a ton of fun geeking out over all the little details of the show, and we want you to join us every Monday.
So search for Disney Plus Reviews. That's Disney P-L-U-S Reviews. Hey, Phil, how about that Baby Yoda? Baby Yoda says, what's a podcast?
In the mid-80s, it got back to me and the church youth group that there was a Christian punk rock movement happening in Southern California. And we could see some of these bands at Cornerstone if we'd make the summer trek to Lake County. Mike Stan, lead singer, guitarist for the Altar Boys. Special thanks to Dan Michaels for hooking me up. Get out your leather jacket, put on your red bandana, turn the amp up to 11. Let's go.
Good morning, Corey.
Mike, thank you so much for doing this.
Sure.
What else with Corey Mann? On the Studio DNA Podcast Network.
Mike, it is great to see you again. I know you recognize my face when I was 16 years old, back tent at Cornerstone, when you were signing my cassette cover. I know you remember yesterday.
I remember that. Now I know who you are. I recognize you totally.
Yeah.
That was 1987, right?
Yes, it was.
See? I told you. I remember that. Yeah, the cassette cover.
Where am I talking to you at right now?
I'm in Santa Ana, California.
Is that home base for you?
Oh, yes. I've been living in this house for 10 years. I've been living in California all my life. Born, raised here, fed here, everything here. Grew up in Fullerton, went to college in a few places, Arizona and Santa Barbara, but eventually got married, moved to Orange, stayed in Orange, stayed around this area for the past 40 years, Orange, Santa Ana.
Who were mom and dad?
My mom was Betty and Keith. My father died when I was very young, a result of World War II, a lot of injuries from Iwo Jima and different things. When I was five, he passed away. My mom and my grandparents, both sides, raised me. From there, went to Arizona State for a year, and then went to Santa Barbara City College and Fullerton College and dropped out of school. But then eventually went back and got my degree, two teaching credentials, and a master's degree.
Did any of Dad's story in his past make it into your music? Did any of that make it into the songs?
No. I do have a lot of memorabilia from him, and a few. We found a letter that was read at his funeral. A commandant read about his service. He mentioned that he was on the Iwo Jima during the flag raising, and one of his best friends was Michael Strank, who was one of the Marines that hoisted the flag, the bigger flag, the second flag on Iwo Jima. And then afterwards, it took a photo of a lot of the people a lot of the Marines that were up there, just within a minute. And if you look next to Michael Strank, who is my dad's friend, you'll see someone that looks a lot like me. We believe that's him, since it was noted that he was up there. That photo you can find. In fact, I just posted it on my Facebook page because they colorized it. They colorized a lot of things from Iwo Jima. So what I do is I look at a lot of the battles he was in and just want to know what those boys went through. I'm very intrigued by that whole thing and how they're able to rise above in those situations, difficult situations of literally life and death, and what my father went through, and so many Marines. Of special note, too, is Michael Strank, who I'm named after, by the way, died on March 1st, just 8 days after hoisting the flag atop Mount Suribachi. I'm intrigued by that.
Yeah. What was the first song or first cassette, first vinyl, first show that awoke something in you that I want to go do that?
Well, I tell you, I just love the guitar from a very young age. I remember my grandmother used to wear this apron when she cooked, and on it was a guitar. I go, I want to play one of those. And my brothers always were very musical. My brothers, John and Roger, very musical and always had songs around. And then when the Beatles hit, yes, I was alive then. It was like, wow, look at these guys.
Got to get you into my life.
Yeah, there's something else. But I was listening to music prior to that. I remember Put Another Dime in the Record Machine, shouting some of the early 60s, almost rockabilly music. And then when the Beatles came on, that was a big shift in music. When I heard Grand Funk Railroad and David Bowie and early Elton John, The Who, I went, wow, this is incredible stuff. It never occurred to me that I could ever write songs. I never felt good enough. I never felt good enough as a singer or anything like that. Just didn't recognize that, and nobody recognized that in me. And that's just kind of how it was. When we started the Altar Boys, after I committed my life back to Christ, we were looking for people to be the lead singer and to be the main songwriter and the main spokesman for the group. And we would try different people out, and we couldn't find anybody to do it. So we had me on guitar, my cousin Jeff on drums, and I think by then, I think it was just him and I, just starting out. We eventually found Steve and our early bass player, Ron Baca, and we're looking for a fifth person. Because someone had to sing, someone had to write the songs, someone had to talk in front of the people, and we couldn't find anybody. So after a while, I said, you know what, guys? I sing, okay, I'll just try it, and we'll just see how it goes. I write a little bit, and if we find somebody in the meantime, great. If not, I'll just do it. Because Jeff was like, I'm not going to sing. Steve's like, I can't sing. Ron's like, I can't sing either. You sound okay, Mike, so give it a shot. You seem to write okay songs. So that's how that happened. So I had no aspirations to do that. I looked at these guys and said, I can't do what they do. I have no idea. But it just was through hard work and just trying that I was able to do it.
Do you have a favorite Beatle? And if so, which one?
Paul McCartney. I love him and I hate him. I always says, it's like he made the night and says, I hate you. How can you? It's not fair. How can you write Blackbird and then do this one and Penny Lane and then Live and Let Die and Maybe in My Maze, which I think is his greatest song he's ever written, my personal opinion, because it's so personal. And then come out with all these, you know, I was just listening, watching Coming Up, the video, and listen to the song. I'm like, it's not fair.
July of 1982, summer of 82, E.T. is number one at the movies. Eye of the Tiger is the number one song on the radio, and the Altar Boys take the stage for the very first time. What do you remember about that show?
Oh, I remember that well. I had my black handkerchief on my neck and my jeans on, and we were ready to rock. People were blown away. I have some photos from that. It was documented pretty good, and I have a very, very good memory of what went on there. And people were like, this is wild. What are you doing here? And then I go, you know, I'm just doing the Beatles sped up. I don't know. We're just doing it. And from that point on, the Altar Boys started playing 8 to 10 times a month. From that point on, it just kind of took off on its own inertia because it was a real need here in Orange County. It was a real great little, a nice little movement. We came in about a year after the Lifesavers and Undercover, a little bit on their coattails. My brother played drums for the Lifesavers, and I got to know both groups pretty good. And I sat in with the Undercover and played guitar. It just felt natural for me to move in that direction. But yeah, that was quite a time. That was a good little concert, and it just took off. I'm not kidding you. Just like we went from 0 to 60. Played everywhere, any place, anytime, for any amount. We had, you know, you're young, you have that flexibility to do that. And we would set up parks. We would go to the beach, literally carry all of our gear over the sand up the cliffs. We went to camps. We played a lot of high schools during their lunchtime. High schools at night, and they allowed it then us to come in then to play. A lot of, you know, a lot of churches, dances. A lot of the Calvary chapels out here were very open to us having this play. Man, it just was amazing, the doors that were open just instantaneously. We worked, but it just happened quickly for us.
Were you and the guys the driving force of that sound? It was so raw and powerful. Or did you have to have somebody come in, a producer, an engineer, and go, all right, if you want to do this, we're going to have to do this? Or did you know, like, this is how I want to sound?
Yeah, most of the time we would play the songs live and see how they did and before we went in the studio. But we tried real hard, especially on the early things, all the way up to about Forever Mercy. Getting them live out there, trying them live, see how they go, see what the audience thinks. Okay, when we play them, how's the tempo? How are they reacting to it? We did have producers early on, Rob Watson, Terry Taylor, but they kind of took us as we were. I mean, they make suggestions and say, maybe try it like this, slow it down a little bit, speed it up. And then as you're doing your vocal overdubs, they would coach you along on the different words and how to say things. But pretty much that was us. We, you know, Rick was real creative when we would rehearse. And I had a pretty good idea what I wanted to do. And Jeff would just take direction real well. And then Steve was in and out. He always had a real good feel for what we needed to do.
There were many a day after school where I would sit and stare at those cassette covers. And as you and I are talking, over your left shoulder is a guitar that's bringing back so many memories. Is that the...
Oh, you mean my Epiphone?
No, the other shoulder.
Bill? Oh, you mean this one.
Is that the guitar? I think it is.
Yeah, that's my guitar. That's my Fender.
Look at that thing.
It's heavier than I thought. I haven't picked it up in a while. Yes, this is the guitar. I got it in 1985, just before the When You're a Rebel sessions. When we started When You're a Rebel, I remember, you know, it was always a lot of time to set up the drums. And I remember having to change all the tuners. I remember Jeff or someone saying to me, you pick a weird time to start working on your guitar, Mike. I go, well, we've got 3 hours. The guy's got to get the drum sounds and all that. I might as well change my tuners. So, yeah, this is it. Only thing I've changed is the bridge, because the original bridge I tend to cut myself up when I played, but this is what we recorded, well, all the songs with. Forever Mercy, they wouldn't use it as much on that record. It was mostly my Rickenbacker. But, you know, When You're Rebel, all GLM, all of Against the Grain.
Do you remember writing Gut Level Music on there? Do you remember writing that or painting that on there?
My friend of ours, John Stoddard, he's the one that painted this on here. He first put a little cardboard thing on here. He cut it out. I said, well, that's not going to be very good to be on here. That's going to fall off. I said, why don't you paint it on? So he did. And it's come off a little bit. And I haven't repainted it. I left it as it is. And this guitar has been beaten. I mean, I beat on this thing. And it still plays great, you know?
Love it.
Yeah, so I remember writing on this. I lived on Flower. I wrote most of Gut Level Music. My wife and I lived in a little house, 148 North Flower, a two-bedroom, and I used one room as my office and wrote, I think, the entire Gut Level Music record in there. It was 85, and we moved out in 86, and I had record written. Wrote GLM, Religion, Calling Out the Believers, I wrote up in Lake Arrowhead. You Are Loved, I wrote on vacation in Palm Springs. My Poor Wife, I was writing songs, terrible.
I remember seeing you at Cornerstone Festival in Lake County. I would love for you to share with us the Green Notebook story.
I don't know what I was thinking. For whatever reason, I usually have a big, thick lyric book, and I have a whole drawer full of them. And for some reason, I don't know, I had a lyric book, and I started Final Hour on there, and I took it with me to Cornerstone. I don't know if I think I was going to write there. I just grabbed it. We always got to take a notebook with us. For whatever reason, I took it with me to Cornerstone. And we did the gig. I think it was 85. We played the midnight show, I believe, in the small backstage area. What was that called? I don't know what that little glass house, if you remember, greenhouse. So anyways, we played, and you know, it was just so much stuff backstage, and we packed up and we left, and we came home, and I got home, and I'm like, okay, I got some time to start working on that song. And I'm looking for that Green Notebook that had lyrics. I know Final Hour in it, at least, and maybe a couple more, but it had that, and I'm like, oh my goodness, I can't, where is it? And it just dawned on me, I took it to Cornerstone. I wonder if I left it. So I got on the phone, I called there, and he happened to see that notebook and thought it was important and picked it up. Otherwise, we would not have had Final Hour, because I did not remember those lyrics. I think I did find a sketch of it in another notebook, but that was done in that notebook. So I did a really dumb thing by doing that. So even up to this day, I never take any kind of notebooks or anything with lyrics or anything to any of the gigs, because I know it can happen. And hey, I was 30 something years old. I'm a lot older now and forget things a lot. I have a lot. My short term memory is not what it used to be. So I'm real careful these days not to leave things. Although I just lost one of my good guitar chords after 10 years, didn't get it back. So it happens.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
In the garden, he fell to his knees. The time had come, and he knew the sacrifice just had to be paid for you and me. It's the final hour. It's the final hour before the cross and the victory. Hey!
When a show would be over and there's a line of kids that would love to talk to you or get your autograph or whatever, what song do you think bubbles to the top on the most feedback of Altar Boys music?
Yeah, people just really identify with You Found Me.
You Found Me.
Yeah. Our Life Begins at the Cross, that was Rick's. I think it's our most popular or most song that resonates. I don't like to use the word popular. I guess you could. And it's interesting because that song, I remember writing it. I was living on Stevens just before I got married, and I wanted to write a U2 song. Yeah, you always look for some kind of inspiration, right?
Sure.
I literally, in 20 minutes, wrote that song. I don't know. It just kind of came out of the middle of nowhere. And I thought, well, this is interesting. And I took it to the guys. Got another song. We learned it quickly and played it. And people just loved it. And I didn't think it was really about me when I wrote it. But years later, I looked at the lyrics and go, you know, this is kind of true. I remember being in England when we were there in 1988. You got to play, you found me. You got to play, you found me. So it became a staple and a very special song to us and to everybody that enjoyed the Altar Boys. I mean, I didn't see it when I wrote that would do that. I didn't think it was that great of a song. I just knew it was, it worked. But years later, to have people write you letters about that song, that particular song, and of course it was covered by MXPX. You know, that's pretty special to have that. The other ones as well, You Are Loved, He Knows You Better, When You're a Rebel.
Who is the big Donna Summer fan in the group?
Oh, you mean Unconditional Love? None of us. That is interesting. I think we did that cover because we were hearing a lot of bands doing covers. Undercover was doing covers. Some other groups were doing covers in the area. Started doing these, taking these songs and cut, we're like, and I started searching around for something we could do. And everyone was kind of doing a hymn. I thought, well, I don't know if I want to do a hymn. They're kind of doing that. Maybe I can find something else. So I was listening to the radio and up comes Unconditional Love. I'm like, kind of thought about it. I think I went out and bought the single, the 45, and listened to it. And I thought, you know, this might be kind of cool. I heard she's a Christian. Maybe we can redo this in our style. And so I just poked around with an arrangement that I thought would come close, presented to the guys, and it wound up being an opener. I think it opened the Gut Level Music album, and opened side two on the record. You Are Loved, I think, opened side one. And eventually it became the opening song. So we just heard it and tried it and messed around with the arrangement, and it worked.
Let's fast forward to Altar Billies. Tell me about that.
Well, the Altar Billies was a fluke. I have a friend, my wife and I have some friends in common, John and Wendy Hollins, and it was early in 2009. It happened. The Hollings had my son and their son were both in kindergarten. So my wife kept telling me, you got to meet John. He's like you. He likes these bands, you know, X and the Ramones and all this. And so I saw this guy walking through the church parking lot with a Ramones shirt on. And I go, well, that's a guy I got to meet. I don't know him. And it wound up being John. And we became good friends. And at one point, he wasn't playing that as much right then at that point in his life. And I invited him to play guitar in a Bible study I was having on Wednesday nights. I was doing the music for. And one night he comes in and says, hey, I want you to listen to this. I took one of your songs and I re-recorded it in a rockabilly style. I think a lot of your songs would really fit rockabilly. I go, really? Well, I had a lot of introduction to rockabilly, you know, knew a lot of some Eddie Cochran and Elvis, and always looked at the Beatles, who's this Carl Perkins guy on their Something New album with Matchbox. I didn't particularly like the Beatles version of those songs, but that was my introduction to rockabilly. So we just started talking. I said, well, why don't we try to play together a little bit? He had an upright bass, and we started just tinkering around with some of the Altar Boys songs and making them Billy versions of them. And we just started messing around with it. We found a drummer. So that lasted until about 2011. And I thought, you know, we need a couple of our own songs, new songs. So I started writing a little bit. I hadn't written in a lot of years. I stopped writing when my kids were little, and I was kind of get my teaching credential, and I was just busy. So I would just play at church and occasionally be an Altar Boys reunion. So I just started writing these songs. It came out of the middle of nowhere, and really studying rockabilly, Sun Records, all the music out of Virginia, going below the surface of Hound Dog and getting into Elvis Presley's Sun Years and getting into what Carl Perkins did, I'm just like, wow, this is great stuff. I didn't have access to it in high school. With the internet, you can go on and find anybody. So I'm listening to all these cats going, wow, this, I like this. This is it. I found my place. And that's what I do. I study, I read books on rockabilly every day and study Carl Perkins and Elvis and Jerry Lee Lewis. I'm just fascinated by what they did. It was so unpretentious, the music. I'm not saying it was all innocent, but it was certainly unpretentious and new and wild. It was the punk rock of the day. So that's the story. I write, we go in and make some records. We're in the middle of the third record right now, and it's just a wild ride.
I bet you're all wondering what Mike Stan, the rock and roller, does in 2021.
Oh, I'm a teacher now. I teach music in Santa Ana Unified School District.
Wow, music teacher with Mike Stan.
Well, you know, yeah, but I can't be that guy. I have to be this other guy. One of the fun things I am able to do, up until this whole lockdown thing, I had a little rockabilly group with some kids at one of the schools, fourth and fifth graders. Little upright bass, little drummer, and just introducing the rockabilly. It'll call the Wild Mustangs of Monta Vista.
Mike, this has been fantastic. How can I point people who hear this and go, I remember that guy? Where are you at online?
Well, look for No Substitute. We didn't talk much about that record. I don't know if you're aware of it.
You proud of that one?
This is a miracle. This record's a miracle. Recorded it in 1991. We finished it in 2018. We transferred it digitally. It was on tape. And so they're really good songs. I'm really shocked. Yeah, this album was a total miracle. By the grace of God, we finished No Substitute. It's a great Altar Boys record. No, right now I'm focusing on writing Train songs.
Okay, hang on a second, Mike. Did you just sneak in, I'm working on Train songs?
Yeah, I write Train songs. I got a lot of Train songs. Songs about trains.
You like songs about trains?
I write. Well, yeah, I wrote the song about the big boy. I wrote the theme song for the Union Pacific big boy. Couldn't come over there to Ohio, but yeah, written song. That's what I've been doing, writing songs a lot. We get a lot of videos, Alter Billy's, Great Big Rollin' Railroad, Great Big Rollin' Big Boy. Yeah, I really have a knack for that. I really enjoy writing songs about steam locomotives. I wrote a song called Whatever Happened to the Caboose. Whatever happened to the caboose? Locomotive, don't pass me by. And then the Altar Boys, I wrote Ride This Train, right? So I have a deep affection for trains and the railroad and everything. We were invited to play for the 150-year anniversary of the Golden Spike up in Utah a few years back because of Ballad of the Big Boy. So we have a kind of a special relationship with Union Pacific Railroad. So yeah, trains, man.
Trains.
It's happening. Locomotives, steam locomotives mostly.
Mike, it has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for responding and chatting with me. This has been great. Thank you.
You're welcome, Corey. Anytime.
What else with Corey Mann on the Studio DNA Podcast Network? Leave some feedback. Write a review. Hit the subscribe button so you never miss a new episode. What else with Corey Mann on the Studio DNA Podcast Network?
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.